You're listening to the MLB.com Hot Stove Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com's Hot Stove Podcast. Tim McMaster here along with Jim Duquette. And Duke, it's the day after the Super Bowl. Peyton Manning going out on top as the Broncos beat the Panthers in the Super Bowl. And we were talking about it. Maybe not your most exciting Super Bowl, but the best thing about the Super Bowl being over is that everybody kind of starts to turn their attention to baseball, because really a week away from pitchers and catchers reporting, and we're going to get rolling in the 2016 baseball season. But one more note on football. We saw Peyton Manning go out on top. We expect him to retire after winning a championship. How about some baseball players who have a chance to do the same thing in 2016? That's where we're going to start things off today. I get five players for you, thanks to Anthony Castrovince, who has an article up on MLB.com right now about this. But you get David Ortiz with the Red Sox. You have Chase Utley, who's with the Dodgers again. Bartolo Colon again with the Mets. Ichiro, and then Carlos Beltran. Five guys who could be in their final season. Some officially, some not. But of those five guys, who's the most likely to go out as a champion?
You know, it's interesting because I do think there's a couple of those guys that really have a chance. Ortiz, for sure. When you look at what the Red Sox did, I think they're obviously one of the better teams in the American League and tops in the American League East, adding Price and trading for Kimbrel. And Ortiz would love to go out on top. And you know, it's been a couple of years since they won the World Series. He is one of the best postseason hitters, really, that we've seen over this generation. So he's one guy for sure. Colon, with that pitching staff as good as it is, and it may not be as a starter, like he's going to start the year as a starter. He may be as a reliever, but I do think he has a chance. And I think even a guy like Chase Utley, the Dodgers are always in the mix. They have the high payroll, high expectations with the good pitching staff with Clayton Kershaw there, obviously. I think they're a team. You know, Beltran with the Yankees, I think it's going to be a stretch for them. It's a tougher division. He has an outside chance. Ichiro, I think, for the Marlins, that's going to be a reach. They have to have a lot of things go well. Their room for their margin of error isn't quite as good as the others. But I think all five of those guys. Listen, Torrey Hunter had a real good run and almost ended up getting to the postseason in his last year. I expect that a couple of these guys are going to have their last seasons, at least in the postseason.
Yeah, and some of them haven't won that ring in their career. So you kind of, I think you get to that point, and fans who don't have a team in the race will certainly be kind of rooting for these guys. I know when Beltran got to the series with the Cardinals a couple of years ago, there was a big push. Hey, he could finally get this ring.
Yeah. With the Astros, right? Oh, well, he got there with the Cardinals, too. Yep. Yeah, I mean, you're right. You know, Beltran is one of those guys, too. If you think about it, he's a borderline Hall of Famer.
Right.
So to not get a World Series ring, you know, it just kind of speaks to how difficult it is.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on to kind of news of the day. And the Caribbean Series just wrapped up over the weekend down in the Dominican Republic. Cuba, obviously, a part of that tournament. In the end, Mexico came out as the champs, the team from Mexico winning it. But news today is that a couple of players from that Cuban team reportedly have defected and before long likely will be available to major league teams. A pair of brothers, Yulieski and Lourdes Gurriel and Lourdes Jr., Gurriel. One of them 31 years old, Yulieski. Lourdes Jr., a lot younger, just 22 years old. And that makes their situations a little bit different. Let's start with Yulieski because he's 31 years old. And I know a lot of people consider him to be the best Cuban player right now playing in Cuba.
Yeah, and you know, he's a guy that plays third base. He's got international experience. He's been MVP on the international level. They've won international competitions. Like you mentioned, best player in Cuba there for quite some time. Now that he defects, he's a guy that can play. You know, I heard a comparison recently to Alexi Ramirez. He may have even more power. He's had 30 home run seasons down there before. So he's a guy that will get a lot of play. A lot of it is going to depend on when will he be available for teams to sign. He has to go through clearance issues, and he has to establish a residency as well. But at some point, you're going to see teams bidding on him and bid, you know, a high price tag, I believe. And our own Jesse Sanchez, who I spoke to recently, he thinks he'll be with a major league team in the big leagues sometime this summer. So really exciting to kind of hear and think about the opportunity that he's going to bring in. He might be that bat, that offensive bat that teams are looking for, you know, around the trade deadline, maybe before that, can have an impact on the races.
Yeah, it's really fascinating when you look at it like that. Teams will have a chance to see what their weaknesses are through the first couple months of the season, and then suddenly you have a guy like this who becomes available. You don't have to give anything up. You just get to pay out money. Now, it's a little different for his brother. Because he's 22 and the rules state in order to be a full-fledged free agent, you need to be 23 with 5 years' experience. He doesn't quite fit that. So if he doesn't wait till he turns 23 in October, he would have to go into that international bonus pool, which July 2nd, it would become available if he clears everything else by then. But that kind of makes things different for him.
It does. You know, we've seen a couple guys where teams are willing to go over the international bonus money. We know it's 100% tax if he's under 23 years old and you sign him. So there could be teams that are pushing the envelope and giving him money. And these young players, too, coming over from Cuba, they've been getting paid like $40 a month, I think it is, to play. And so it's a huge financial windfall for them no matter what. He may not want to wait till October. I mean, you know, he could wait till October. He could become an unrestricted free agent and money would go up. Plenty of teams would bid on him. There'll be a couple teams that are not allowed to because they've already gone over their budget money, so that they have the fines and are unable to sign players of that magnitude. But there's still going to be a lot of interest in him. So I'm fascinated to see if he waits until he turns 23 or not. But he is, according to a lot of people, the top prospect coming out of Cuba. So here you are. You got the older brother, top player. Younger brother, top prospect. It's going to be a pretty good little family payday for the two of them.
Yeah, and I would assume they'll probably end up with the same representation. I was guessing. And so that makes it interesting. Maybe they end up being a package deal. Who knows? To help things as far as getting adjusted to living in the major leagues and that sort of thing. So that's something to keep an eye on. The other kind of news of the day is that Tyler Clippard and the Arizona Diamondbacks appear to be getting real close on agreeing on a deal for Clippard to go to Arizona. Now, we knew when Arizona dealt for Gene Sakura in that deal, they kind of saved some money. At the time, it wasn't clear when they would maybe spend that money. This seems to be it makes sense. You saved about this much money and how much Tyler Clippard would cost. But if this does happen, what does Tyler Clippard bring to that Diamondbacks bullpen?
Well, they needed someone at the back end. Dave Stewart told me this recently, too. They were looking for someone in the back end, either a closer to upgrade on Ziegler, who had 30 saves last year, was really good, or maybe even an eighth-inning guy. Clippard can do both. I mean, he was really good last year with the Mets. He closed out games in Oakland, had 17 saves in Oakland, had two with the Mets. So he had 19 last year. He 2012, not too long ago, 3 years ago, he had 30-plus saves, 32 saves for the Nats. So, you know, he can do both. And I think the one thing that you saw out of him last year, I think he ran out of gas. There's a lot of there's a knock on him this year. Oh, maybe he lost velocity, which he did. His stuff wasn't as good. But in September, went down the pennant race. The Mets used him a ton in August, and then he just flat out he was out of gas in September and into the postseason. So you kind of put those aside. You make sure that you do your due diligence, make sure he's healthy, which it sounds like he is. He's always had a good arm. And you got a good, experienced back-end relief pitcher if Arizona is able to finalize this deal.
You surprised he's lasted as long as he
yes.
has?
Yes. I think a lot of these guys that are sitting out there, you know, still, and he's the main guy, I think, that you look at, but I think you're looking at 3 years. You know, it's not unexpected to think he's looking for 3 years.
Yeah.
And because he had a down end of the year, I think that he took a hit. You know, Bastardo was looking for 3 years because of a lefty. You know, the lefties like Tony Sipp got 3 years, you know, and he got two from the Mets. So I still think that the market is strong for these relievers. And I don't know, you know, with Clippard, I am surprised that he's sitting out there in February, but it is a good fit there in Arizona, and I think he's going to pitch well out in the National League West.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, the struggles late in the year, but when he first went to the Mets, he was great for that first month. They used him a ton, and he was tremendous. That was when they went on that wild run in August to really take over that division. He was a big part of that, but I think what stands out in people's mind is October, when he really struggled in the postseason to get guys out. But I think the body of work for Tyler Clippard is certainly in his favor. Well, for a long time, Tyler Clippard was part of a bullpen there in Washington, D.C., along with Craig Stammen. They were a big part of that Nationals bullpen, and now Craig Stammen looks like he's getting close to a deal, minor league deal, with the Indians. Now, Stammen coming off the injury, he only threw four innings in 2015. It was a torn right flexor tendon muscle. Do you think Craig Stammen still has a good amount left in the tank if healthy?
I think he does. You know, this is one of those where it's you know, low risk if you're the Indians. He ends up giving you some depth. They've handled guys that come off of this type of injuries before. And, you know, he's gotten a lot of workload. If you look at his career, recent career, especially with the Nats, 2012, 2013, really over 80 innings pitched in both of those seasons. It's a lot of work for a reliever. He did get some opportunities to finish games, and he was primarily a guy that gave you a sixth, seventh, and eighth at times. And I think when you look at him, he's a ground ball type of pitcher, and he's pitched at a high level. So I like this deal. Again, low risk, give him an opportunity to bounce back. And, yeah, I think from Cleveland's side of things, it makes a lot of sense.
It's really been that kind of an offseason in Cleveland, right? When you look at the moves they've made, if they make this one, they brought in Mike Napoli because you need some power, and he's a guy where it's, you know, he hasn't shown it. He's been down, but he could bring it. They've made small moves, but if some of them pan out, it could be a huge windfall for Cleveland.
Yeah, and Rajai Davis was a guy, yeah. Another right-handed bat. You know, they've added some right-handed pieces. They got to get Yan Gomes back healthy, and if they can do that. You know, I'm still concerned a little bit about Michael Brantley and his health from the shoulder surgery, and he's going to be delayed probably the first month. But I think that pitching is so dominant, and if they, you know, can add some relief pitches, obviously Stammen gives them some more depth. They're going to be in a lot of games. They remind me an awful lot of the Mets a couple years ago, even last year, where their pitching would keep them in so many games, and they're just trying to have a couple of guys, obviously they have some young talent there as well, keep themselves in some games and maybe make a deal at the deadline to get some, you know, going offensively. So we'll wait and see. But Cleveland's a dangerous team and not getting a lot of attention because they like you said, they haven't had a real big winter yet.
And they're in the AL Central, and man, when you think about that division with, I mean, it's hard to pick out the weak link in that division. I mean, you look at all the teams, the Royals are the defending champs. The Tigers finished last year. And you could say they're maybe co-favorites with the Royals. Every team in that division, it's really impressive to see what they've all done to get better and better. All right, let's move from the bullpen to the starting rotation as far as still available free agents go. And there's a couple of guys with great histories. They're coming off injuries. You don't know what's left in the tank, if anything. But let's touch on the two of them, Tim Lincecum and Cliff Lee. Let's start with Lincecum. 2015, he made 15 starts with the Giants, 7-4, a 4.13 ERA. He's a guy who, when needed with San Francisco, has shown some success from the bullpen during their postseason runs. He's obviously not what he was once upon a time when he was a back-to-back Cy Young Award winner. But where could Tim Lincecum end up, and what is left?
You know, it's hard to know for sure. He had the hip issue, had the surgery, and you know, now that he comes back, was that the cause of the real big drop off in fastball velocity? You mentioned, you know, his Cy Young days, you know, he was mid to, you know, let's say 95, 96 miles an hour. Now he's under 90 miles an hour average fastball velocity. There's a lot of teams that I think are kicking the tires there. You heard the Marlins. I know the Orioles have been interested. There have been other teams. The Giants would probably take him back in a relief role. Yeah, I think he has to determine what he wants to do. If he wants to start, there are teams out there that'd be willing to take a shot at him. He's only going to pitch at 32, you know, and you hope that because of that surgery that you know, he's able to bounce back. So hard to really know. I think he's better off in the National League than he would be the American League. So any of the National League teams that have interest, I think you look for them, especially a place like the Marlins, who has such a, you know, a pitcher-friendly ballpark.
You talk about guys who later in their career, every pitcher, I guess, has to kind of reinvent themselves when the velocity starts to go. And here's a guy who once he got to that point, on certain nights, I mean, the guy's thrown no hitters since he's kind of lost that edge, lost that velocity. So what is it that he's able to do on certain nights to still be so dominant, but he can't seem to put together a stretch?
With Lincecum?
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because I think he gets out of sync with his delivery. And I think that's the one thing with him that, you know, he's gotten results. He's pitched well on occasion, but, you know, and he's got the breaking ball that sometimes he's reluctant to throw, but he's got a real good changeup too that acts like a split finger. And I think that mostly it's about his direction towards the plate rather than his direction when he's falling off towards the first base side. It's common for right-handed pitchers. He's got a lot of moving parts in that delivery, and I think that's his biggest issue that he has to kind of come to grips with. And it's not anything he doesn't know. It's something he's been working on. But you also wonder, you know, because of, you know, the workload, the high innings pitch, the hip issue, you wonder if that wasn't at least some factor in why he had a down year. And, well, you know, basically why he's pitched the way he has over the last year and a half, 2 years.
Now, Cliff Lee is a little bit different. When you mentioned it, Lincecum still just pitching at 32 years old. Lee a lot older, didn't pitch at all last season, coming off the injury, still has the great history, and he is a guy who seems to know how to pitch. Last time he pitched was 2014, 4-5, 3.65 ERA, and 13 starts back then. Is he going to find a home?
Yeah, that's a great question. That I don't know. I spoke to his agent about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, and it's going to have to be the perfect fit for him. You know, and I think that's where he doesn't need the money, so it's not like he's coming back for the money. I think he wants to get paid, you know, anywhere from $6 to $8 million. It's hard for a team when he hasn't pitched that long to invest that kind of money. He's looking for a guaranteed roster spot. It's hard for teams to commit to that. This is a tough one to figure out. He's better off in the National League if he's healthy. He didn't have the surgery, by the way, so there's also some questions about how far, you know, you can go and how far he'll last. When he's healthy, he's the best guy out there of this entire list. The problem is you just don't have a comfort level. And even if you have a tryout or a workout, you're not going to really know for sure. So this is a tough call on whether he even comes back. If I was guessing, I don't think he comes back. I think the teams aren't going to make the type of offer that's going to convince him to come back, and he ends up sitting on the sidelines.
And that'd be it for Cliff Lee. Yeah. Great career for Cliff
Lee. Great career, though. Yeah.
And speaking of great careers, a nice transition into Freddy Garcia, who it's been a while since he pitched in the major leagues. He did pitch in the Caribbean Series this weekend. He was actually in the final game that we spoke off the top a little bit about, but he is officially reportedly retiring now. 156 major league wins against 108 losses. He was a two-time All-Star early on in his career, 39 years old now, hasn't pitched in the major leagues since 2013. But you think about Freddy Garcia as that guy who was a workhorse and was on some real good teams. What do you remember most about him?
Well, it's interesting because I had him when he was a kid in the Astros organization coming up as part of that great group. And he was only high A ball at that time. And he had the stuff. This guy's an electric arm. And then he was traded for Randy Johnson to the Mariners, went there, pitched in the big leagues for quite a while there. And then from there went on to the White Sox and the Phillies and Tigers. I mean, he bounced around a lot of different places. You know, when you look at his overall career, 14 years in the American League, it's hard to win in the American League. It's got almost a .600 winning percentage. So I think overall, this guy always battled you, and at the end of his career, he battled you without really good stuff. You know, he had the real good split finger, battled with fastball. So, you know, and I think he's the all-time winningest pitcher at the major league level for Venezuelan pitchers in the history of the game. So he's had a great career, far better than I thought, a career 4.15 ERA, and not surprised at this point that he's going to, you know, hang up the cleats. But there's a spot for him in the game somewhere. I'll be curious. I would not be surprised if he resurrects himself somewhere along the line. Maybe it's just, you know, he has a baseball academy down in Venezuela. Maybe he decides to do that.
And that's where he was pitching all winter. So, you know, it makes a lot of sense. All right, one more topic on this podcast. How about some veteran leadership free agents? Guys that aren't going to cost a lot. They're there at the end of their career. I got three guys. Somehow they're all former Phillies. But Jimmy Rollins, Shane Victorino, Marlon Byrd all seem like guys that at this point in their career can bring you something in the clubhouse, maybe not as much on the field anymore. Are all those guys going to end up finding teams here before all said and done?
Boy, it's a tough call. I think that when you're at that point, you know, you want to be able to go out on your terms. I think Rollins is a guy that he had such a down year. He's willing to play both positions, maybe some second, some short. I don't know if he's willing to take a backup role, a bench role or not. Victorino, same thing. You know, a couple of these guys, again, when you're in that spot, it's hard to go from that playing every day to then not playing on a regular basis. So I do think there'll be a couple of those guys that get opportunities. I wouldn't be surprised if Rollins got an opportunity for sure. Victorino, I'm not so sure. Who's the third one again?
Marlon Byrd.
Oh, Marlon Byrd.
A little different, I think, because he's a guy who seems to have been in this where will he end up kind of game for years now. He always ends up in a different place and seemingly on a contender somehow.
And he's aged pretty well, and interestingly, you know, and you know, he's always had a couple of those things circling around him with the PEDs. But the last couple of years, I mean, listen, he got traded to the Giants and was an impactful type bat. And if you look at his overall career or his overall numbers just last year, 23 home runs. So I think he's going to end up 28 the year before.
Almost better with age, Marlon Byrd. Yeah. So disappointing early in his career, but it seems like once he kind of figured it out, he's just sustained it.
You know, and that's the interesting thing is power numbers have gone up since then. He's figured out how to train a little bit better. I think he's had a little bit better approach, different approach. I remember Justin Turner telling me that he credited Marlon with his revitalized career in couple last couple seasons in L.A. So, yeah, I think he's going to end up somewhere. He's a right-handed power bat. It's hard to find those type of guys. It's just a matter of where he fits. Cleveland's a team for me that would be a real interesting fit. I don't think he's played there in his career. In fact, he hasn't. But Cleveland still needing power, right-handed bat, and with Brantley out, he'd be a guy at least that would be, I would suspect, on the radar.
All right, a good spot for him. We'll see how all of that plays out. That's going to do it for this edition of the MLB.com Hot Stove Podcast. We have just one left a week from today. One more Hot Stove Podcast before pitchers and catchers report. Jim Duquette, as always, great job.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.